And guess what? The only people who do the technology for that new green initiative happen to live in the Midwest. And they paid for it to get on our ballot. Sounds good in a 30-second soundbite in a commercial. Sounds good in a little piece of mail. But that's how we're allowing our state to be governed. So I think it's time we at least have the conversation. I know that there's a lot of details in there that people are concerned about, but I think that's something that we address by having public debates, that we have hearings on it. I think the legislators should be the ones that are the delegates to our constitutional convention. I'm not suggesting that they be that part of it. And I'm not even advocating for what the reform should look like. But I would trust the democratic process to yield that new constitution and give the people of California the power to vote up or down on that constitution more than I would trust having special interest to it. And at some point, we have to have this discussion. And there are other states who do it all the time. There are other states that have constitutional conventions every 20 years. They ask themselves, is our core governing document continuing to do what we think it should do? In California, we don't ask that question. We hire people to represent us as legislators, and we spend money on a legislature that we then tie the hands of and don't have them govern. And then we blame them when things fall apart. And then there's a lot of blame. There's a lot of reason to blame them. I'm not, you know, I'm 5 months into this job. I'm looking at how do we do this reform? How do we get from where we are to where we need to go? And I think it's worth at least having a conversation about a constitutional convention. I promise I'd end it by 7, so I'm going to close with that. I can tell you about some other things that I'm working on, but that's probably a whole lot to chew on right now. So I want to take questions, and some of these are going to be on constitutional convention, but hopefully we'll talk about all the issues that are facing you. Hi.
Well, the constitutional convention has been tossed around quite a bit, and I'm glad to see support because I think it's probably a good thing. But one of the greatest fears, and you mentioned it, is special interests will control it.
Yeah.
Well, if the legislators are a majority of the delegates, they'll be pressured by special interest lobbyists who already have their telephone numbers. If it's comes through the initiative process, the initiative is going to be driven by special interests. So how do you avoid special interests, number one? And I think there's a great fear out there that a constitutional convention where the legislators are the majority of the delegates will result in a worse document than we have today.
And I don't think they have to be a majority of the delegates. There's nothing that's at all. Now, that being said, I think it's legitimate for our state capitol to have hearings on it and talk about ways that we can protect the process from being overcome by special interests. Realize this too. I mean, we say special interests, but everyone has an interest. I'm a mom of 2 kids. You know what? I'm a special interest. I worry about my 4-year-old and my 6-year-old getting through our education system and being prepared for the economy they need to work for in California. I'm a special interest. Not just as a legislator, but just as a parent. You know, seniors who struggle every day on fixed incomes and have to worry about taxation rates increasing and affecting their fixed budgets. They're special interests too. And they're not all special interests are a bad thing, because every person who comes to the table comes with their own unique experiences, and that just adds to the diversity of the conversation that we have. And as long as you're diverse enough, I don't know, maybe you sequester them. You know, there are ways that you can try to build a process that will yield a document that's not so tainted by our current process that people might trust it. And here's the other thing you can do. You can give the voters the ability to vote it up or down. And then you're comparing the status quo versus whatever the Constitutional Convention came up with. And you can say, is it worse than where we are now? Or is it better than what we're doing right now? You know, and it may be that some of the things that are in, because when you have this conversation, part of the problem is every page of this document got there by somebody's special interest, right? They spent money on a campaign, they gathered signatures, they had the voters vote, they did TV, and they got it into the Constitution. They're pretty happy with it being there. So you even have this conversation, it means somebody's going to lose something. But there are ways that we could make these provisions go in the statutes instead of in our Constitution, so that we can address them over time. And we can have public debate about it, and we can have bills to reform some of those, and not necessarily take things out of the Constitution never to be seen of again. I mean, I think that there's ways that you can address that, but I'm not advocating for any particular solution. I just think that if we get enough people together in a room and we get a population together that says the system right now is so broken, I'm willing to invest the time to look at this and do the kind of reforms that we need to do in California so that we don't keep coming back to where we are now, then I think it's worth it. Yes, sir.
How are you going to deal with large special interests in the state with the education body? And they're going to want to keep, I presume, they will lobby very strongly towards keeping the preferences they have in the Constitution. Currently, they fought very hard against Schwarzenegger's proposal, which was Prop 91, which you probably recall. And you're right, everybody's a special interest.
Yeah.
But that's one that's going to be very powerful.
Well, and it's one that I think most people in the state of California, the reason that they take such an active role is because most people actually do want us to have a good K-12 system. They do want us to have good higher universities for people to get their degrees and be able to flourish right here in California. And if that's one of our highest priorities, then they probably have the most to gain from a constitutional convention, from untying all the strings that are currently binding the state of California and allowing that conversation about our priorities. Because if that really is our priority, they will have a better deal at the end of a constitutional convention than where we are now.
I don't believe they'll perceive it that
way. Well, you know, and not everybody will like this idea. I mean, what the education community has is, they have Proposition 98, which put a minimum floor, a minimal level of funding into our Constitution. There's cost of living adjustments that are supposed to happen based on the Prop 98 formulas that are in the Constitution. And here's the truth of the matter. We went from being in the top 5% of schools in the country in the 60s. We are now in the bottom 5 by every marker. We are 47th in per pupil spending. I know it sounds crazy with as much with it being half our budget. We are 50th in staffing ratios. There is not a single state in the union that has lower staffing ratios than we do. It's bad for education, and part of that is because we have all these other ballot propositions that sound good, and they are just as entitled to funding as our schools are, and you can't prioritize one over the other.
Can I make a comment on the education? We sent our kids to parochial school, and I don't know if the numbers are true now as they were then, but throwing money at the problem isn't necessarily going to solve the problem. Back when my kids went to school, which was about 35,000 years ago, parochial schools were basically taking in and spending about half as much per child as public schools were, but yet they were consistently outperforming them by a large amount. And I think what it is the other commitment that the parents, the kids themselves are putting into it, and also the teachers themselves. So it's not just dollars that makes the difference.
No, it's not just dollars. And the thing is what has happened over time is something bad happens. And everybody in the state legislature wants to legislate for that one bad incident. And it's happened in education more than anything else, particularly LA Unified. Because it's a big school district. I mean, a huge piece of the budget for education goes to LA Unified because they have so many students. And LA Unified does something wrong, and everybody in the state legislature goes and passes a law to mandate a fix that all the other school districts now have to comply with. I mean, we've got so many, I don't want to pick and choose all the different ways this has happened, but like textbooks. Some school districts, their textbooks stay good for a really long time because they just don't have that many students and they can keep them in good condition. And we've got a mandated rule that you've got to change your textbooks every 7 years, no matter who you are and no matter how good they look and what condition they're in. Because some school districts, 7 years was too long and they were falling apart, literally pages coming out, and they were still using them. So now all the school districts have to buy new textbooks. We've got that use it or lose it mentality in funding. That if you use all the money that you have in a particular budget line item, then you must have needed it. And therefore, you can have a better fight for getting that money again next year. So we've got line items, so many little pockets of money for different things that the schools have no flexibility either. They've got a little pocket of money over here for computers. They buy all the computers, and this is a true story of something that happened. They bought a whole bunch of computers, they put it in a storage closet, and an auditor came by, opened up that storage closet, and saw a whole bunch of brand new computers that had been sitting there for 3 years. Computers. You know? They're out of date 3 years later. Because they had the funding for the personnel, the IT person, to install the computers had been cut. So they bought the computers, they sat in the storage room, and there was no one to install. Okay? Those are the kinds of things that are happening. So yeah, we absolutely have to do reform in our education system, and part of that is looking at where were we in the 60s when we were in the top, and where are we now? And how do we undo some of the things that have been done over time? It's the same conversation that we're having about this Constitution. You know, how do you create that flexibility, trust the local process, trust local school boards to be empowered to make those decisions and stop mandating from the state down on all the different school boards? So it's a conversation we've got to have in order to reform our education system, but we got to do it at our core document too. I mean, this is a conversation that's rife at so many levels that I really think that if we don't take advantage of this down economic time to really talk about these kinds of reforms, when things get better, no one's going to pay attention. And everybody's going to be like, oh, we got through it. And we'll have lost an opportunity. You've been raising your hand a bunch of times. Sorry.
How long do you expect to take this constitutional process? I mean, is there an estimate and how much will it cost?
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know that it has to cost a lot of money because it all depends. Do you pay the people who participate in the constitutional convention? Is it a volunteer exercise? Is it, you know, the time and effort to set it up in the legislature, I don't think costs any money. We're already paying people to be there, and they can't do a whole lot with the current constraints that they have. They're completely ineffectual by design, so they've got the bandwidth. Yes, they're trying to deal with a budget crisis, but this is part of the conversation in dealing with the budget crisis, is how do you reform our system so that we can make priority decisions? And in terms of how long it takes, I'll be honest with you, there are not a lot of people talking about this. I'm probably one of four. There's 120 lawmakers. And if my constituents are okay with me having this conversation, I mean, I don't want to go out there on a limb and just be talking about this and have my constituents say, why are you spending your time having that conversation? We think that's a crazy idea. It's part of why I'm talking about it in all of the town halls that I'm going to, because I want to hear from you. If you think it's worth the fight, I'll spend my time. You're already paying for me to be there representing you. I'll spend my time fighting for it. Because to me, if we don't reform this system, we're just going to be right back here. And I don't like the way that we're headed, and I think we need to fix it.
I'm curious, which states can you point to that have had fairly effective constitutional conventions? Are you able to do that?
You know, Jennifer may be able to, because she went to one of the summits that had all the academics who had compared and contrasted different states. I wasn't able to go, but she did go for me to try to get that information.
Well, I know the lawyers who have done some sort of process, and I can really talk to you about that.
Yeah. And there's at least 10 of them that do it on a regular basis, so we have other models. We're not alone here. I mean, we are unique in that we're California, and there's so many other things going on here than others than what other states have to deal with. But I may be going out on a limb here, but I would venture to guess that there is not a single state that has a document this long, because no one else has the ballot initiative process we have. And that's what's adding pages and pages and pages to our Constitution. So that's my feeling.
I have two parts to the question. The first question you can easily answer, when do you begin the next budget process? Answer that question first, and then I'll come in with my observation.
Right now.
Okay. It seems to me, from the last experience that you went through, only for 5 months, and others went through for numerous months, that you held each other hostage. Republicans and the Democrats, and you gave little to each other, and you didn't listen very often, and everybody had their agenda, and they protected their agenda because they're defending their particular philosophy. Now, if you're going to make a change in this government of ours, then we have to get past that, because it doesn't matter what constitutional convention you do, if people are so vested in their own interests, as the Republicans, Democrats seem to demonstrate on a regular basis, we go nowhere once again. And I think you might even fear what's coming up next, because we're still in a $40 billion problem, and it can only get bigger. So.
Absolutely. I agree with you that we need to, the partisan bickering is, there is no justification for being where we are. I'm not going to defend it. I just got there. I see it. I see that as polarized as our districts are, the Republicans who pound on the sand are heroes in their district. They're doing great things for their constituents. And the Democrats who pound sand and have the other side of the spectrum, they're heroes too. And that's part of the problem, is the people in the state are having that kind of a dialogue, and there isn't that camaraderie that says, let's solve problems together. It's, I'm only here for 6 years, because we've got term limits, I'm just going to make my constituents happy, regardless of what's in the best interest of the state of California. And I hope that Proposition 11 will fix some of that by having the legislative lines drawn differently, so that you won't get, if you have more moderately drawn districts where it's not, we're going to draw this as an absolutely safe Republican and this pocket is an absolutely safe Democrat, and you've got people that have to represent all their constituents, that maybe you get a little bit more of that. But I still don't think it's the end-all, be-all solution. Because if they don't have any flexibility and they still deal with this, we'll still have a problem. But it might make it a little bit better. Term limits has its pluses and minuses. I would not be here if it wasn't for term limits. Because the representative that I replaced had spent 6 years and was termed out. So you do get new bodies in and out. But no matter how many new bodies in and out we put in every 6 years, we still have the same problems. So I think we've got to look at the whole system.
I agree with what he says about everybody fighting each other. But my question is about housing. I am trying to buy a house, but I don't have any money. And Sacramento Housing and Redevelopment Agency has homes for sale. But I couldn't talk to anybody from an agency office. They would give me a list, but then nobody else could talk to me. So I went to the redevelopment agency myself. I was in a line that said it was number 53. My number said 73. And I never could get there. And I talked to the guard who was there, and he said, if you want anything from the VRA agency, you have to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning. Well, I can't do that either. My bicycle is on that tree right beside me. And so I said, well, I'll talk to somebody on the telephone. So I called somebody on the telephone, and they didn't even know what they were talking about. Now, I found out all these homes on the internet on a page from the Sacramento Housing and Redevelopment. So if the state has this page and I can find it, how come the people in the office can't find it? And how come I still can't have any information about why can't I buy a house? And if I do find out, the newspaper says the contractors and investors are the ones who are buying all these houses. And people like me, I can't get them. I need to know why that's happening.
Yeah. Thank you for your question. I don't have an answer for you, and I don't want to just blow smoke at you here. But I do want, what you're raising brings up another important point, which is whenever you're having trouble with any bureaucracy, whether it be state government or local government, That's what we can help with. Because there's something about saying, hi, I'm so-and-so from Assemblymember Allison Huber's office that makes people actually return your call. So we want to provide that service for you. And that's why we've got district representatives that are here that can help you with any problem you're having with any bureaucracy. It doesn't matter if it's unemployment, if it's housing, whatever it is, that's what their job is to do, constituent service, and make sure that the bureaucracy and the red tape isn't getting in the way of the information that you need to receive. So I'm going to ask you to talk to any one of our field representatives after this and see if we can get your name and number and help you in at least getting the information. I can't tell you how many times somebody in some department doesn't know what they're supposed to know. Happens all the time. We're going to find people who know the answer and make sure they give it to you, okay? Thank you. Yes,
sir. I grew up in another country. I was 20-something years old when I came here. I've been living here for 35 years, and I've also raised four children, my wife and I. We have been married for 35 years. And I have distinct advantage of seeing the education system in another country and education system here, the politics in another country and politics over here. And I have a lot of ideas and suggestions every subject you would think of on education, the role of parents, which is really greatly lacking, and some of the bureaucracy involved in the education system. It's just unbelievable. But I have one or two suggestions which I want to give. One thing for sure, the politics has become so corrupt that a person, when goes to the assembly or senate there, they go as a very honest person like you did 5 months ago. And it doesn't take long when you are so much influenced by other lobbyists and whatnot. And earlier you pointed out, I'm also special interest because I've written this and that. The politics, the state government, the federal government, then these are all extension of family. As a father and mother, if you have more than one children there, they all are different personalities. You don't wait for each one of them to lobby you to do the things for them. You as a parent look into what is the best for the family and you make that decision. We expect the same thing from the legislatures, that we don't need to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and sometimes millions of dollars to go there and influence them. This is what you should look into. Like what you are doing here. You do that here. So I have a suggestion that somehow you pass a legislation that only all the legislative candidates should be able to raise the money only from their district, not a penny from outside the district. So they get true representation there. And when you get elected, you know that these are the people who gave me the money, these are the people who gave me the vote, these are the people who supported me, and I better see what their interests are, and I address that. And on the education front, I have one suggestion that we teach everything under the sun. We never teach our kids in high school anything on how to handle finances. Mm-hmm. As they turn 18, all those people with the credit cards and how we're down there, vacation in Hawaii and this and that, sign up with us, and it takes no more than a year before they're so deep in there, they don't know how to get out of that. And we tell them, you're 18 years old, you go do whatever you want to do. And if somehow you could influence having one education class in high school where the kids are taught how to manage their finances, how to budget, how to do the things there, I think that can solve a lot of problems. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Give more people time to talk. If I take up too much time here, I want to make sure you all get a chance to ask questions, but I'll be here for a couple minutes afterwards if you don't get the time to. But yes, sir.
In regards to education, according to several sources, California spends about $8,500 a year per pupil for K-12. But according to the school district I work with, which is Sacramento Unified, they only receive $5,700 a year. Well, that's about $3,000 short. Where does that $3,000 go? And then you get down to the school side. Most schools send about $4,000 to $5,000 per site. So it's by the time you get down to the school site where the kids actually are, you're looking at like 50-55% of that smallest in the nation amount anyways. Mm-hmm. But that first 3,000 off the top, where is that going?
Mm-hmm. There, yeah, and I don't have, because it depends on the district, It really does. It varies from district to district, but I can tell you about some of the complaints that I've gotten in the San Joaquin County districts is they've got the County Office of Education, a lot of administrators in the County Office of Education. They've got consultants that their job is to teach the teachers how to teach, which after they already got their teaching credentials and they already got, you know, and so you have a lot of layers of administrative overhead in each school district, and that's one thing that hasn't been micromanaged by the state level yet, but not to say that I wouldn't put it past them, but and some of that is the remedy is that local school board and that local control lobbying that County Office of Education, that the cuts that we're experiencing right now, they should be the farthest ones from the classroom. They should be, I'm sorry for anybody who's a consultant in the room, but those consultants, I'm sorry, one consultant pays for like 10 kids to get fully educated. So I think you have to start making those kinds of judgment decisions at the local level to say, this is what we're gonna prioritize our money on. And it happens at so many different levels of bureaucracy. It's one of the reforms that we need to have. Well, in reality, what they're getting money on is not an exact amount per kid. Because some kids cost $3,000. Some kids cost $15,000. You have kids in special ed, they cost a lot more than the kids that don't. So it's an average of how much you're getting for every kid, but they're getting kids for, and they're getting money for, you've got low class size reduction, well, you get that. And if you decide to go over that class size reduction, you get penalized, and money comes out. And so there's all these complex formulas that go into account for every school district based on the decisions that they make in that school district. And I'm not defending it, I'm just saying that's where we've let it go. That's the system we have.
Students like to see education today. And I just can't help but think somewhere along the line we have to get some sensibility to this too. I recently retired, 39 years at Lockheed Martin at the Advanced Technology Center. I'm a research scientist. And so I've got a little bit of a handle on eighth grade math. And when I first moved up here, Arnold was wanting to make it so that all the children here could speak eighth grade mathematics, you know. So I called up the local high school and said, hey, I'll be a volunteer. I can come in. I don't need to. I'll just retire, I'll just come in. Well, we can't do that, sorry. No deal. I've gone to some tutor places just to see if I can help some kids out too. Yeah, no deal. So 39 years in research is not enough to teach the 8th grades.
Yeah, I know, I have the same complaint too, because I wanted to teach too. I tutored math all through college, and I tutored high school math, and I have a JD, and I practice law, and I work in government. I can't teach high school government. So I feel your pain.
This lady over here would like to ask a question, and then I'll ask one.
Okay.
This lady right here in the green shirt.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Just a little small background. I have an integrated child care. I was a teacher, social worker, have a nonprofit for abused women and children. My main concern right now is I continue to hear legislature speak of children are the future, children, and continually I see them getting cut. I'm 33 years old and I've taught and I've just seen just a dramatically. Special ed is, and I work in special ed, so this is no offense to anyone, but it's a joke. It's so much politics and there's so much, it's a lot of just mess. And I'm an advocate, so I hear the families, they're coming to me and they're like, well, who do we contact? Who's gonna be the outside person that, and I don't mean capital, I don't mean state, who's the outside person that can come and say, you know what, this is the problem. We don't have to vote on it. We see that if you see there's a big old stain on the floor, you don't have to take a vote to say, who's gonna get it up? Let's get the stain up. So I think, the frustration that I have right now is that I see lots of politicians, they're running and they're saying, oh, we're gonna do this and we're gonna do that, and children, because they know that's a tearjerker, but when they get in office, it's not followed through. Who's gonna be those people that are gonna stand up and say, you know what, something has to get done, because essentially the children are the future, and if this is what they're gonna be left with, we're gonna be messed up. So I'm just trying to.
It's the reason I bring up this constitutional convention, which sounds so radical. But can we get any worse than we are right now? I mean, I don't want to see that day, because I think people do have good intentions and they do want to do the right thing. And then they come in, they get back down. I'm looking at how can I do the right thing? Like I said, like the Select Committee on Lowering California's High School Dropout Rate. I said, there's a problem here. We're not spending anywhere near the time we need to be spending on that problem, because we've got these education committees, they have hundreds of bills of all these, everybody's little idea about how they're gonna fix something based on some isolated incident that happened in some remote part of California, and now they got a new law they want everybody else to have to deal with. We have gotten to the point where we have passed every little law that we could, and we need to talk about how we start undoing some of that. And it's hard to even to know where to start. And I'm still just coming from the outside in. This is the only thing I can come up with as a starting point. Because if you try to start at the local level and, you know, at these regional centers over here, special ed, that's a whole other problem right now. A quick aside. 10 years ago, what to expect when you're expecting, you have a little baby book you buy. It used to say that kids born with autism, 1 in 10,000 births, a child would be born with autism. Now it says 1 in 150. Okay, all those kids are going through our school system. And we are woefully unprepared to address that huge increase in special education needs of those autistic. So I feel for you working in special education, and it's just, when you look at the library of codes that we have passed in the state of California, we've got a law on everything. At some point, we have to undo some of those things. And we need that flexibility in order to prioritize our budget, in order to make those kinds of changes locally and start, because one of the things that school districts complain about all the time now is we cut their funding, but we still mandate for them to do X, Y, and Z. And they just have no way to pay for it. And they don't know, which law am I going to not comply with, because you're cutting my funding and you're not cutting the other side of the ledger, the obligation that I have to actually comply with. I think it's going to take us a long time to undo the damage that we've done, but I refuse to accept that we can't do it. And I'm willing to fight for it if people in my district will allow me to do that. I want to fight for on the district issues too, and make sure that when there's crazy laws that shouldn't be on the books, that we're looking at those and advocating for changing them. But I think we've got to do the big picture too. Yes, sir.
Welcome to to our community and the you are new to the legislature, and there was a problem. You got a spot on your nose there reported in the B about the transit. The transit.
You didn't see the meeting I did right before this one.
And I don't want to necessarily go straight into transit. I was going to give you some generalized direction here, but in answer to your question about the Constitutional Convention, I don't know that we're going to, you're assuming that there's a democratic process. And that's the problem that I have with the existing political system that we have. I believe that, and also I think you need to reassess your definition of special interest. you said that moms and seniors are special interests. I would propose that the AARP, for instance, is a special interest, and it's insofar as they pushed for the Medicare Part D, and they have interests in that way. And so, but for everybody to have an interest in healthcare, that's not a special interest. To everybody want to have a decent education is not a special interest. To have a safe community and to have police is not a special interest. Those are the interests of the people who work. The people who own the country are the ones who ought to run it. That came out of the rebellion in England in the 17th century. The people who own the country ought to be the ones that run it. And we still pretty much run on that. The problem is that we've privatized our profits, and we've socialized all the costs. That means we have no education. In addition to paying all the taxes, we also have no decent education, no health care, no public transit. No, we have scarce resources in energy, water, housing, as was indicated by this gentleman over here. We have unfunded mandates, but that's because we're not taxing the people, or the, not the people, but the corporations that have the money. It was in the Bee about a week before you got the egg on your face that the state government is taxing us people, but not the beer industry, the wine industry, the industry for oil and energy. This is the problem. And we have state and federal revenue tax sharing and spending that is so out of kilter. Most all of our money goes to the Pentagon, and we have these wars going on. So if we look at it as the state being the bureaucracy, that's the executive committee for the special interest, the owning class, you know, really, I think that kind of puts it into perspective so then we can not worry so much. I see you struggling with how to even frame the question, and that's the way I see it.
Thank you. I'm going to do one more question. We're over time now, so we can talk about, we can have individual questions after.
Yeah, I raised my hand about 25 times.
Sorry. So you're the one more question. There you go.
I think it's more, a little more than a question. We have a lot of federally mandated programs. Okay. And oftentimes they're not federally funded. They're unfunded programs. And then the state has to go up there and pick up the tab for it. And I think that when you talk about special interest, a lot of special interests are nonprofits who profit with special interests. And they're the people who are making a lot of money, these nonprofits who are doing nothing for the public except for themselves and for their own corporations and organizations. What I really wanted to focus on was on the trillions of dollars that are due the state of California. And the Bee isn't reporting on it either, mind you. But the state of California has been paying federal taxes to the state tune of 70 to 80 cents on the dollar is what they're getting back for every dollar they put in there. So where is the 20 and 30 cents going to? Why isn't the legislature or the Senate or the governor or the Bee for that matter, why isn't anybody starting to focus on, we wouldn't be, it's not a question that we spend too much, because sometimes we do. But on the other hand, there's a lot of money that other states are getting. They're getting trillions of dollars of our state money that the feds don't send back to us. That being the case, when is somebody going to get on the ball and start telling the feds to bring the money back here so that we don't have to keep raising our state taxes, raising our sales taxes, where other states like Palin's state, who has no sales tax and no income tax, gets double the amount that they put into the federal pot, they get double back. So they're getting representation without taxation. And I'm kind of tired of that, and I want to know, what are you going to do about it?
I agree with you completely, and I've mentioned it three times on the floor, that every dollar we send to Washington, D.C., we're only getting 77 cents back. So I absolutely agree with you. We need to do more, and would you believe this is one of the things that we have a partisan fight about. We can't get our congressional delegation, all those representatives for California in Congress, to agree that we should be getting more money for California. I mean, those are our elected representatives that should be representing the interests of the entire state, and they make it a partisan issue. It was a partisan issue in the state legislature when we had the unemployment insurance benefits bill that we just voted on a couple of months ago, and the issue there was the federal stimulus package had money for states' unemployment programs because they recognized with the increasing and skyrocketing unemployment that our systems were collapsing. We weren't going to have enough cash to pay out all the unemployment claims for our skyrocketing unemployment rate. It became a partisan vote on the floor. It wasn't going to cost the state of California a penny, and we were going to get 3 years at least worth of funding for those unemployment claims in California. And my view was, if it helps us to get more of that dollar, that every dollar that we send, if it helps us get that money back, I'm voting for it, because it's in the best interest of the state of California for us to get our money back after we put it in. It was a partisan vote.
Yeah, I'm an independent. I'm not a Democrat or Republican.
Yeah.
But I am tired of Republicans who keep saying, we got to stick to the budget. But when it comes time for the rest of the country to stick to the budget,
They're not telling down the other states to stick to the budget. It's okay for us to send our federal money over there. One of the Republicans is going to start talking about sending back our money back to here.
I agree with you. I wish it wasn't a partisan fight, but it has become that. We are out of time because we rented the room, but we have comment cards in the back of the room and that you can... I'm sorry, I can't hear you, Jen. Okay, and my staff wants to make sure I remind you of the mobile district offices that we have right here in Elk Grove. So you don't, our district office is located in Lodi where Alan Nakanishi had it. We couldn't afford to move it. We kept it right where it is. I live in the northernmost part of the district. Our district office is in the southernmost part. I'm in the Capitol at least Monday through Thursday right now in committee hearings and floor votes, but we also have mobile district offices in all the areas that we represent. So Elk Groves is the first and third Tuesdays each month from 9 to noon. Chanel is probably stepped out into outside right there. Where'd she go? Oh, she's over in the patio? Okay. So Chanel was one of the people I introduced in the beginning. She's staffing those mobile district office hours. If you have problems cutting through the bureaucracy and you need a state representative to help advocate for you so you can get the information that you need, we're happy to do that. They can also tell you the other kinds of services that we provide. We have a whole bunch of different pamphlets and things available for you to take on the budget, on a whole bunch of other ones. Andy wanted to say something. She keeps waving at me.
And the scouts want to retire.
Yes. And the scouts are going to come and retire the flag. Thank you again to Boy Scout Troop 118, and I'm going to turn it over to them so they can all go home. Thank you. Yes.
Oh, school. Yes. Let me kill this.